examples of all sagittal and coronal approaches to the skull base through the nose. We know that to reach the skull base, we can follow several corridors from anterior and also from the lateral skull base. And we know also that the transnasal corridor is the pivot of these specific anatomical areas of the anterior skull base, middle skull base, and posterior skull base. And we can divide the approaches to the skull base in the so-called sagittal approaches to the ventral skull base and to coronal approaches to the adjacent areas and to more lateral areas of the skull base itself. And so we can summarize these sagittal approaches for different midline areas and for the lateral areas, the so-called coronal approaches. And so the first part of my presentation will be focused on the sagittal plane approaches, starting from anteriorly, and so from the posterior plate of the frontal sinus to the craniocervical junction. And so all these different approaches allow us to pass through the nose and to reach different areas of the ventral skull base. The first one that has been described in the literature is the so-called transfrontal approach and allow us to reach the posterior plate of the frontal sinus looking for the nasal vault, and our landmarks are the septal branch of the anterior tumoral artery and the first olfactory phyla. And in this way, we perform a so-called draft-free procedure in order to expose the posterior wall of frontal sinus. And after that, if we need, we can also open the dura and expose the intracranial structures. This is a possible example of what I'm explaining you. This is a big meningoencephalocele of the foramen sequel that we approach with this transfrontal approach. If we go a little bit posterior, we can define the very well-known transcribriform approach that allowed us to reach this area of the skull base. But if you look very precisely, you can speak about a transfrontal, transcribriform, and transplanum approach, because most of the time when you treat sinonasal tumors of this area, you also extend your approach a little bit anterior and a little bit posterior. Just to show some anatomical pictures that describe this approach, starting from anterior, these are the two frontal sinuses opening in a draft-free procedure, the nasal septum and the two middle turbinates. Now we are cutting the nasal septum in order to better expose all the nasal fossa. Now you can see this nice picture with the two middle turbinates, the nasal septum that was previously resected, and the two inferior turbinates, coanas, and the removal of the two middle turbinates and all the tumoral complex bilaterally that has been removed in a centripetal resection way. You can see the anterior ethmoidal arteries. Here we have the posterior ethmoidal arteries that are in the skull base, in the specimen, sphenosinuses, and frontal sinuses anteriorly. Now we are removing the mucosa of the olfactory mucosa in order to expose also the bone of the cribriform plates. And if you need, you can also remove the lamina papyracea bilaterally in order to expose the periorbit bilaterally. And you, after the cutting of the ethmoidal arteries, you remove the bone of the ethmoidal roof and cribriform plates in order to expose the underlying dura. And removing of the crista galli is another very important step. Otherwise, you cannot remove the dura if it is needed. And this is the area where the crista galli was removed. This is another very important step whenever you have to remove the dura. This is the lateral view with a 45 degrees. You have always to remember on the margin of your bony defect, you have to dissect very well the dura from the surrounding bone. This is because after removal of the dura will be very difficult to put your layer of reconstruction if you don't perform this dissection before removal of the dura. Now here we opened the dura bilaterally, exposing the frontal lobes and the branches of the medial orbital frontal arteries. And we are cutting now the folks. And this is the last view of our transcript from approach with both the frontal lobes well exposed. This is just a very fast example of application of transcript from approach from intestinal type adenocarcinoma of the right nasal fossa. I just skipped to the focused of this procedure when the tumor was already removed from the nose, but in order to reach free margins, we had also to remove the skull base. On the right side, you can see, on the left side, sorry, you can see that we are preparing the skull base. We cut on both sides and the ethmoidal arteries. Now we are removing the bony. You see that we detach very well the dura from the surrounding bone. On the right side, very carefully, we are opening the dura. Remember that the arachnoid is very adherent to the branches of the medial orbital frontal artery, and so you have to very carefully dissect the arachnoid from this vessel in order to avoid very dangerous bleeding. Now I'm cutting the olfactory tract bilaterally, you can see, and so the olfactory bulbs are both included in the specimen. We skip to the next approach, the so-called transplanum transtuberculum approach. With such an approach, we access into the sphenoid sinus. You see bilaterally, this is the tuberculum cella, this is the planus sphenoidale, and this is our opening with exposure of the dura after the removal of the bone. Here you can see our window with the optic chiasm, the two optic nerves, and this is a magnification of the optic chiasms with the pituitary stalk, and these are the branches of the anterior hypophyseal arteries, very important branches to be preserved in such an approach. And another magnification, the optic chiasm, the medial orbital frontal artery and FPA, A1, A2, this is the optic tract, optic chiasm, optic nerve, pituitary stalk. And if you go above the chiasm, you can also reach the third ventricle and navigate inside the third ventricle. You can see the thalamus, the intertalamus adhesion, the Monroe foramen, and the access to the third ventricle. This is a classic example of transplanum transplanum transtuberculum approach. This is a craniopharyngioma, infundibular craniopharyngioma, in which the tumor origin from the infundibulum. And so here we are opening our window, we are exposing the dura, we are removing the tuberculum. Now we are opening the window into the intracranial space. You see here, this is the chiasm, and this is the surface of the lesion. Now we are opening the lesion, and very, very gently we are starting to remove piece by piece the lesion. And after that, we start to find the plane in between the anatomical structures and the lesion. In this step of surgery, you have to be very careful, especially in order to preserve, as you can see here, some branches of the superior anterior hypophyseal artery that is here, and if you can preserve, it's always better in order to not have problem of vision after surgery. And so we are pulling very carefully and at the same time dissecting the capsule of the lesion in order to remove all the lesion itself. Here we are doing after the removal of the lesion a view of the surgical field. Now, the so-called transcellular approach. The transcellular approach is the classic approach to reach the cella, and so the pituitary gland, and this is the classic approach that we use to treat pituitary adenomas. These are the so-called four blues, the intercavernous sinuses and the cavernous sinuses. This is our door to the cella and to the pituitary gland. And this is the classic view after the opening of the periosteum of the cella. This is typical case of GH microadenoma. I want to stress how much is important to extend our opening of the sphenoid sinus to the floor of the sphenoid. Otherwise, you don't have enough space to move your instruments. You remove the bones that cover the periosteum of the pituitary gland. We always open and remove all the bone till to the cavernous sinus here and cavernous sinus here. After that, we open the dura. In such a case in which we have a very small pituitary adenoma on the left side, we perform a quite target resection, and so we found the lesion. And after the removal of the lesion, we explorate inside in order to be sure about our cross total resection. And now we start with the posterior skull base, and so we can divide the clivus in three thirds. The first one is the transdorsal approach, and so this is the pituitary gland, the chiasm, the dorsum cella, that is our door in this approach, and the intracranial structures. You can see the basilar artery behind the anterior pontine membrane, the third cranial nerve between the posterior cerebral artery and superior cerebral artery. And this is just an example of a clinical application. This is a clival chordoma, clivus chordoma of the dorsum cella. This is the cella, and you can see how we remove progressively the lesion, taking advantage of a compression of the pituitary gland superiorly, and on the other side, with the suction tube, we remove progressively and we expose all the dura. This patient had also a 6th cranial nerve palsy that was here on the right side, and we decompressed also the nerve. We have the second portion here of the clivus. You see here the cellar prominence, the two paraclival carotid arteries, and this is the door of this approach. You can see the intracranial structures, the pons and the basilar artery, the superior cerebellar artery, and so the structure that you can reach with such an approach. This is an example, clinical example, of a typical disease that gives CSF, that is acordosis physalifera. This is a remnant of the notochordal remnant that can give CSF because the presence of null in the dura, as you can see in this movie. This is the lesion. It's green because of the flourishing. Now we are removing progressively the flourishing, the lesion that is like a gel. Is a little bit solid sometimes, and in other part of the lesion you can also have a gel component. This is the natural hole in the dura due to the presence of the lesion. After that, we explore intradurally here to remove the residual lesion, the component intradural, and you can see the basilar artery here. Now we are removing the intradural component very carefully because of the branches of the basilar artery for the pons. And after that, after the removal of the lesion, a gasket seal reconstruction with fat and cartilage in order to ensure a complete closure of the defect, and we also put nasoceptive flap. The last clival portion is reached by the so-called lower clivus approach, and you can see here all the structure, extradural structure that can be reached, and so the jugural tubercle, the hypoglossal nerve, the occipital condyle, and behind the BBJ with the vertebral arteries and the medulla oblongata. This is an example of a lower clivus chordoma. This is a nasal view from the choana. The lesion was here from the posterior wall of the nasopharynx. You could see the prominence of the lesion. We are performing our corridor through the nose. Now we are resecting the rostrum sphenoidale. The lesion is here, lower, and we can start to see the lesion. This is the nasopharyngeal flap that we also remove later because in contact with lesion, and we are opening better the sphenoid sinus, and this is the lesion that was pushed down. We are drilling out the bone of the lower clivus here, and we proceed inferiorly, taking advantage also of the transoral corridor, and we cover all the cavity with a nasoseptal flap. The last sagittal approach before the chasm line, that is our limit for transnasal approach in the sagittal view, is the so-called transodontoid approach for malformation of the cerebro, of the cervical, of the odontoid. You can see here the view after the harvesting of the nasopharyngeal flap. You can see the arch of the atlas. This is the odontoid process. We remove, after two osteotomies, the arch of the atlas, and so we expose the odontoid process. You can see all the ligaments, the apical, the alar, and the transverse ligament. Here we have the lateral masses of the atlas, and the tectorial membrane and the dura of the craniocervical junction. And so the medulla oblongata behind the dura after the opening of the dura. Now we change our perspective, and we start to speak about the coronal approaches, because we finish all the sagittal approaches before.
Before proceeding for the next steps, I would like to ask you some nuances for such approaches. Are you using a Doppler during those kind of procedures, while approaching the sphenoid sinuses and those kind of lesions? And second of all, are you using other instrumentation for such lesions, like not only angled endoscopes, but also other instruments that are curved to approach such lesions?
Yes, for the first question, of course, the use of Doppler is mandatory and is a very, very simple instrument, but is the most important instrument in such approaches whenever you work very, very close to especially carotid artery, and is especially for lesions that we will see later for coronal approaches, is most important the Doppler than the intraoperative navigation, because when you are speaking about soft tissues and tumors, when you remove the tumors, the anatomy always changes during the procedure. And so something that could be useful is the intraoperative MRI or CT scan, but for during your procedure, the use of Doppler ultrasound, especially when you perform surgery in the cavernous sinus for big pituitary adenomas, or in the nasopharynx, as we will see later, for nasopharyngeal tumors, for parapharyngeal carotid artery, yes, Doppler is mandatory. You cannot perform this surgery without it. Yes, you need all kind of instrumentation for skull base, and also during the last year, we are also improving our maneuverability, taking advantage also of some holders that can give you an help. We are working on a robotic holder, especially for transsphenoidal surgery, that hold the endoscope and give you the possibility to have a real four hands technique, because you can use three hands, because one hand is for the scope. And you can also, with this new device, move the scope with your feet. And so this is one of the instruments that could be in our very, very close future. Another very important instrument, and then we will go forward with our presentation, are not instruments, but devices like SurgiFlow and FlowSeal hemostatic agents that are also mandatory, because especially for surgery of cavernous sinus or in transpterygoid approaches, whenever you open pterygoid plexus, venous plexus, the bleeding sometimes is very difficult to control, and with such a gel you can control in 2-3 minutes also very massive bleeding that can be very also dangerous if is prolonged in the time of surgery.
Perfect. Thank you. Go ahead.
You're welcome. What about coronal approaches? Now we have our trip along the midline. Now we go laterally towards the lateral areas of the skull base and surrounding structures. First of all, we have to understand that we have two very important doors, the maxillary sinus and the pterygoid process behind it, that are our door to the coronal approaches. And we recently described several modular opening of the maxillary sinus from the type A to the type D endoscopic medial maxillectomies in order to reach different areas different areas of the coronal plane, starting from the standard opening of the maxillary sinus and so an inferior uncinectomy. We can enlarge our in the right side our medial antrostomy till the palatine bone be posteriorly, the inferior turbinate inferiorly, the ethmoidal bulla and roof of the maxillary sinus superiorly, and the nasolacrimal duct anteriorly. This the smaller aperture in oncologic surgery for coronal approaches, the so-called type A endoscopic maxillectomy. For the type B, we sacrifice the inferior turbinate and we remove the medial wall of the maxillary sinus, leaving intact the nasolacrimal duct. In this way, you can improve your opening into the maxillary sinus. And if you want to have also more space, you can also to cut the nasolacrimal duct and remove the remnant of the medial wall of the maxillary sinus. You see how much you can improve your visualization of the maxillary sinus itself with a type C endoscopic maxillectomy. If you need more, you can also remove part of the piriform aperture and anterior wall maxillary sinus. Your landmark in this step is the identification of the infraorbital nerve in the anterior wall of the maxillary sinus, and you can remove the bone of the anterior wall. In this way, this is the infraorbital nerve. This is the right side maxillary sinus. You see how much is very nice your view with a 0-degree endoscope after this procedure. And so this is the more extensive procedure. And so with a modular approach, you can progressively expose far lateral areas towards the skull base, because the areas that we have to reach are behind the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus. I think that this is the most important slide of this second part of my presentation. You have to remember your landmarks, the infraorbital nerve. When you don't, when finish the canal of the infraorbital nerve to the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus, you have this vertical line. If you stay medial to it and superior to it, you have the first layer behind the maxillary sinus posterior wall. You have the inferior orbital fissure, behind it the greater wing of the sphenoid, behind it the middle cranial fossa. If you stay inferior to this line and medial to this one, you have, before you have the pterygopalatine fossa, behind it you have the pterygoid roots, the pterygoid plates and the pterygoid fossa, and behind it the upper parapharyngeal space. Medially to this line you have the temporal muscle and lateral pterygoid muscle, and superiorly the orbit. And so remember this because it's very, very important. And so we know that if we open progressively and modularly the maxillary sinus, we can reach progressively more lateral and more caudal areas. And now we start with our trip towards all the anatomical regions that we have behind the posterior maxillary wall. We start with the pterygopalatine fossa. You can follow also this arrow to understand where we are. We start opening the sphenopalatine foramen because this is the only access that we have to the pterygopalatine fossa. With a carison pins, we can remove all the bone. Remember, always preserve the periosteum as first step, because this is an avascular plane, and so allow you to work without blood. And so this is the sphenopalatine artery, the descending palatine bundle. And behind the periosteum, here we open the periosteum, you have the fats and the vessels and the nerves. After removal of the fat, you can see all the anatomy of the maxillary artery and all the branches. You can see the Vidian artery that go towards the Vidian canal that is here, deep in the pleuric palatine fossa. This is maxillary artery, the deep palatine artery, the lesser palatine artery, the sphenopalatine artery, the branches for the septum, for the middle turbinate, for the inferior turbinate, the infraorbital artery, and the deep temporal artery. So you see a very complex vascular anatomy. You can also have a look of your neural anatomy. This is V2 with the foramen rotundum, the Vidian nerve with the Vidian canal, the pterygopalatine ganglion, and the deep palatine nerve, the lesser palatine nerve, the infraorbital nerve. You know how much is complex the anatomy of the of the pterygopalatine fossa. This is just an example of access to the pterygopalatine fossa on the left side. This is a neural lesion of the pterygopalatine fossa, a schwannoma of the Vidian nerve. I'm performing a type C endoscopic maxillectomy. I cut the nasolacrimal duct because the tumor was going quite laterally. And so I perform, after performing the endoscopic medial maxillectomies, I expose all the periosteum of the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus. Now I'm removing the last portion of the palatine bone. This is a very important step, and you have always to remember that when you have lesions that come from posteriorly, the periosteum of the posterior wall is always preserved, and so to reach the lesion, you have to open the periosteum. You know, now I'm opening the periosteum. This is the sphenopalatine artery, probably, that I'm clipping. I cut the vessel that stay anterior to the lesion, and after opening of the periosteum and cutting of the vessel, I can reach the lesion that is all extended in the pterygopalatine fossa and along the Vidian canal, because it was a schwannoma that originated from the Vidian canal. You see that I'm removing the last portion of the lesion in the Vidian area. Here I'm pulling the last portion of the lesion. After that, I drill all the cavity. And so this is our pterygopalatine fossa completely with complete removal of our lesion. And so now we go forward. We have the pterygopalatine fossa, very small here. Now we go towards the infratemporal fossa. This is the maxillary artery, the fat in the infratemporal fossa. When you remove the fat, you can identify the pelvis of the temporal muscle in this direction. And in that direction, more medially, you have the pelvis, the horizontal pelvis of the lateral pterygoid muscles. This is the lateral pterygoid muscle, the inferior belly, the superior belly, and the bellies of the temporal muscle. Now we can identify different corridors. If you go in between the bellies of the temporal muscle, you can reach the coronoid process of the mandible. If you go in between the bellies of the temporal muscle and the pterygoid muscle in this fissure, you open, you go forward in this direction, you can identify the condyle process of the mandible. This is the articular disc and the ATM. This is the lateral pterygoid muscle and the medial and the temporal muscle. If you go, you can find also the third corridor. This is the lateral pterygoid plate and the insertion of the lateral pterygoid muscle. And if you dissect progressively in this direction, you can start to see the first anterior branches of V3. This is the buccal nerve. If you progressively dissect, you identify the foramen ovale with the with V3 here. This is the lateral pterygoid muscle. This is the greater wing of the sphenoid and the lateral pterygoid plate. If you clean better, you can see all the structures of V3 and the posterior division with the lingual nerve, the inferior alveolar nerve, the mitohyoid nerve. This is the middle meningeal artery. You can see better in the next. The middle meningeal artery, the regular temporal nerve that from V3 go behind the condyle of the mandible, and the maxillary artery. This is an example of a, another schwannoma, malignant schwannoma of V3 that was previously treated transcervical, but they didn't they were not able to reach it, and so we approach it endoscopically. We started with an endoscopic medial maxillectomy. This is the Vidian nerve already. We proceeded to expose the pterygopalatine fossa. This is the pterygoid root. Okay, you see this is the contact of the pterygopalatine fossa. Now we clip the pterygopalatine artery and probably the maxillary artery, but I don't remember exactly if it was already the maxillary artery, but now we clean all the pterygoid root, and now we go in that corridor, the last corridor that I described you. Okay, here we have the lateral pterygoid muscle and the pterygoid and the lateral pterygoid plate here. If you follow it, you go directly to V3 and foramen ovale. We remove partially the pterygoid. In this way, we have more space to work, and this is the lesion. Here, this is an example. Whenever you work in this area, you have a lot of bleeding because there is also a big venous plexus in the area of V3, and the use of SurgiFlow or FlowSeal is very useful to control the bleeding. Like here you see, this is the typical bleeding, and this is FlowSeal. After that, you push 2 minutes, and then you have a very, very clean, surgical field. And progressively, we remove this residual lesion, and so we radically remove lesion, leaving intact the middle meningeal artery that was just behind the lesion itself. And so this is the last door that we will describe in this presentation, the so-called pterygoid process. And I like to divide the transpterygoid approaches in two, the superior one and the inferior one. And the limit is the line of the Vidian canal. If you go superior to the Vidian canal, you go in this area, so in the area of the cavernosinus, of the Meckel cave, and of the Meckel cave and petrous apex. If you go inferior to the Vidian canal, you go in a totally different area. You go in the area of the upper parapharyngeal space. We will start with the superior approach, with the transpterygoid and superior approach, and we see an example of just to show you an important pathology that is juvenile angiofibroma, but you will see better in the next step with Dr. Janaki Ram. And it is the last step of surgery in which we remove the component in the sphenoid sinus. This is the posterior wall of the maxillary sinus. Just to show you, has this lesion go along the Vidian canal, and so you need to expose all that area that I showed you before. And so this is the lesion that we are pushing down towards the mouth because it's very big. This is the Vidian canal that was expanded, but we will see later. Now we are removing the lesion from the mouth. This is V2. This is the area of the Vidian canal, the foramen lacerum, and you see how much, if you go in this direction, you go towards the area of the cavernosinus and Meckel cave. And if you want to approach the cavernosinus, as you can do in big pituitary adenomas, you have to follow also this route, and so superiorly, transpterygoid, superiorly to the Vidian canal. You have always to remove the pterygoid in such a case because you need to have your surgical field, your dangerous surgical field, that is the cavernosinus, in front of you and in the center of your field. You can also reach this area starting from a more midline approach, but if you have any trouble or any problem of bleeding, you have not a direct route towards the cavernosinus. And so I wanted to conclude my presentation with the inferior pterygoid process, transpterygoid approaches. These inferior transpterygoid approaches go inferiorly in respect to the line of the Vidian canal and can also divide it in two different approaches, medial and lateral to the lateral pterygoid plate. The medial axis is medial to the lateral pterygoid plate. Here I'm removing the last portion of the palatine bone and opening the pterygoid fossa. This is the medial pterygoid plate that I will remove, and the lateral pterygoid plate that you can leave also in surgery during nasopharyngectomy if you don't need to extend too much lateral, because it's a good landmark also for the carotid artery, but it depends from the kinking of the parapharyngeal carotid artery. This is the pterygoid fossa. This is the medial pterygoid muscle that we will cut. This is the thorium tubarius, and this is the tube. We are going into the nasopharynx. The first muscular structure after the cutting of the medial pterygoid muscle is the tensor veli palatini muscle that has a vertical direction. This is the tube. I cut the tensor veli palatini muscle, and you see the levator veli palatini muscle, that is the second muscle that you will meet. You see the different direction, that is more oblique, and this is the tube. And so we are progressively skeletonized the tube. Now we cut also the tensor veli, the levator veli palatini muscle, and so you see the tube here. Here we have the lateral pterygoid plate, and here in this area, you don't need to expose always, but for very extended tumor, yes. You have also V3. You see that here we clean, and you can see the tube, V3, and lateral pterygoid plate. Here we clean very well in order to expose the carotid sheets. And so you see how much you are close to the carotid when you are in this step of surgery. When you have to cut the tube, you have behind the carotid artery. And so in this step is the step where is very important, the Doppler, as I told you before, especially because your assistant is pulling usually the soft tissue from lateral to medial with a Blexley, from lateral to medial, is pulling in order to give you space to cut the tissues, but pulling the tissue, pull also the carotid. And so always check, even if you are more medial than you think, but if you pull the tissue, always check with the Doppler before cutting, because you can also pull the parapharyngeal carotid artery. This is an example of a nasopharyngeal endoscopic resection. This is a salivary gland low-grade tumor, is an adenocarcinoma. And so we start with the harvesting of the nasoseptal flap for the subsequent reconstruction. We perform the posterior septectomy, and now we are in the pterygopalatine fossa, that is maxillary artery. We clip the maxillary artery because we have to expose the pterygoid root. Now we are on the posterior wall of the nasopharynx, delimiting our surgical field. This is the lateral pterygoid plates that was preserved in order to have our landmarks. And now this is, you see, he's pulling and we are cutting the tube. But before we check also with the Doppler. And after that very, very difficult maneuver, we finish to remove also through the mouth all the specimen of surgery. And then we put the nasoseptal flap in order to cover the area of the carotid area and those and also the bone of the sphenoid that was drilled out. And the last root in the upper parapharyngeal space is the root lateral to the lateral pterygoid plate. Here we have the lateral pterygoid plate that was removed. If you go lateral to it, this is the medial pterygoid muscle. If you remove, this is the tensor veli palatini muscle, the tube viewed from lateral. This is V3, as you saw before. This is a very important structure. This is the stylopharyngeal fascia. If you open this, you enter into the parapharyngeal space. Okay? And so the nasopharynx is here, and you have here the parapharyngeal antenna carotid artery, the 9th, 10th, the jugular vein, and this is also the stylet process. Okay? And so, in conclusion, we can also reach the orbital, the petroclival junction and the petrous apex. If you go medial and inferior to the carotid artery in the area of the foramen lacerum, you can see here the median nerve. This is an example of a simple case, but is in a very critical area. This is a cholesteatoma of the petrous apex. You can see here the where is the petrous apex very clearly. This is the paraclival carotid artery. We are opening the sphenoid. We are drilling all the septa, because if you have to put any kind of flap after surgery, you need to have all the bone exposed without any piece of mucosa into the sphenoid sinus. Always be very careful in the exposure, and then you start with your lesion. You see that the floor of the sphenoid is totally exposed. And now we start with the removal of the lesion. and we decided for a cavitation, leaving the matrix on the margins of the lesion, because it was not possible to remove all the malignant all the margins of all the matrix of the cholesteatoma also deeply. And so we decided not to put the flap, because the matrix of the lesion was already something surfacing the cavity. And so the cavity remained open after 6 months from the section, and this was the cavity after surgery. And so, in conclusion, I want to say to you that you must be flexible. I described in this presentation all the transnasal routes for sagittal and coronal areas, but you don't have to forget that there are several other approaches, a lot of other approaches that you can do to reach a lesion of the skull base, and you another important concept that you can combine in multiportal surgery. And so, but this was not the topic of this presentation. I want to conclude, thanks all my group that did these excellent pictures that you saw, and we in few months have our publication of our endoscopic transnasal anatomy of the skull base and the adjacent areas atlas. And I want to invite you, and probably also NASOSAN Association, to our International Summer School of June. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you so much, Alberto, for this amazing presentation. I think and I hope that all the delegates are appreciating the amazing pictures, anatomical pictures that you provided. Very, very high definition with all the landmarks, with all the structures that has been signed, so everyone could be able to see, and in the future, due to the fact that we are recording those kind of webinars, the people will be able to rejoin and watch once again to use as a scientific and educational material. Thank you again for the presentation and for the invitation for this summer school. I would like to start with some questions. Plus, I would like to ask the delegates to ask a question to you. The first two questions that I have are mainly based on resurfacing. Then we will lead the delegates for their questions. The first question is the resurfacing. You were talking about the nasoseptal flap for reconstruction. But my question is, what about and what are the other indication for reconstruction, especially in those cases where the high flow of CSF are coming down? Like, are any differences for tailoring those kind of flaps in the different perspective and the different approaches? Like, if you are dealing with those transcribiform and some of the transplantum approaches, or what are you using for transplantum trans-tuberculum cell lesions? Are different flows requiring different flaps, or are you always using the same flaps? This is the first question. And the second question is, what are the indication for the last, what are the indication for the last pathology that you were talking about the cholesterol granuloma? Are those kind of diseases could be always treated through the nose, or there are some kind of diseases that could be reached just simply through the nose, and some of the other cannot be done?
Okay. Yes, the last one was not a cholesterol granuloma, but a cholesteatoma. Mm-hmm. But in general, the lesion of that area obviously should be also always be evaluated by ENT and the neurosurgeon together in order to understand when you can reach the lesion via an endoscopic approach that is better for benign lesion, but also for chondrosarcomas of that areas, when you can reach via an endoscopic approach sometimes is better. But if you have, for example, a big chordoma of the lower clivus with a very big, with a also significant intracranial extension, you have always to consider, you usually consider two steps. The first step by an endoscopic approach through the nose, and the first through the nose, and a second step through external approach, neurosurgical approach from the intracranial and lateral component, intradural and lateral component. What about reconstruction? That is a very big topic. We have totally different techniques if we are speaking about anterior skull base, medial skull base, and posterior skull base. The best to start is the anterior skull base. It's very easy for a skull base surgeons because you have, even if you can have a big defect, you see after transcribriform approach, we have a big defect, but paradoxically, sometimes big defects are more easily to be repaired than small defects. And always remember that in anterior skull base, if you have a defect in the anterior skull base, more than a very small defect, because if you have a very small defect that can stop after using of a bipolar and the CSF stop after the use of bipolar, okay, you can use very easily just a overlay technique with a graft. But if you have bigger lesions, bigger holes in the dura, probably is always better consider the vascularized flap, in my opinion, but you can close also only with grafts. We had during the last years a lot of discussion about anterior skull base reconstruction, about the use of vascularized flap or graft. We described a very useful technique, the three-layer technique with the iliotibial tract for anterior skull base big defect after transcribriform approach. We demonstrate that we have a very low rate of CSF leak. However, I tell you, if you have a nasoseptal flap or a vascularized flap, is always better, is safer, and it is also easier in the postoperative period because you have less crusting and everything. But there are situations like sinonasal tumors in which you don't have the possibility to harvest any vascularized flap. For middle skull base, is different. The flow is higher, and so if you have a small defect after transphenoidal transcellular approach, okay, you can use just a graft or another septal flap. But if you open the cistern, if you perform a transtuberculum approach, we always perform, if it is possible, a gasket seal reconstruction with fascia, fat, and cartilage from the nose with covering of the nasoseptal flap. And for the last areas, that is the most difficult areas, the lower clivus, that is very, very difficult area to reconstruct, also for the geometrical anatomy and conformation of this area, always you must have a very, very good flap, also both from both sides, two nasoseptal flaps, and so you have to combine different grafts posteriorly with fat, cartilage, and fascia, perform a very, very strong gasket seal technique in order to block your graft component of the reconstruction, and put your nasoseptal flaps covering all your grafts. If you have any doubt about this nasoseptal flap or you need to revise this reconstruction, in my opinion, the best option that could be also considered as first option is the temporoparietal fascial flap, because it's very vascularized, it's very thick, and can help you, especially if you have any doubt about infections.
Oh, I have a question from the Emirates. Aziz is asking, are you always using navigation in skull base surgery?
I should. No, really, yes. No, For posterior skull base, we usually use navigation. We have always in the OR, and this is an important concept. You should have, but usually I don't use for the reason that I told you before. Yes, there are specific cases in which you need navigation and you have to use obliquely and whenever. But most of the time I saw that you don't need really navigation, but also because it's not so precise, because the same things that I told you before. Most of the time you have to remove a lesion that moves the soft tissues, and so especially for nasopharynx, but also for chondromas, no? When you remove the lesion and the lesion is pushing some structures, when you remove the lesion, the structures came back. But to understand when you are during the resection is not so precise to avoid, for example, damage of the 12 or for the 6. But to give you an orientation, yes, it's very important. And so for posterior skull base, we always use navigation. And for anterior skull base, I use navigation. And also for middle skull base, we use navigation only in selected cases. Okay.
I have another question from Piotr from Russia. He's asking, what are your imaging preoperative imaging studies for planning?
Excuse me, can you repeat?
What are the preoperative imaging you're requesting for? I guess that he was asking, what kind of preoperative assessment radiologically are you requesting for such cases?
Yes, it depends, because I show you several routes with totally different pathologies. And so you need the images for a correct diagnosis of the lesion, first of all. And second, you need the radiology, a good radiology, also to have a guide for surgery. Obviously, MRI in almost all the lesions of the skull base is the gold standard and the best. If you have a good MRI, it's very important. But forgot that there are also other radiological techniques that can help you in the preoperative assessment, specifically in situation in which you are working very close to some very important vascular structures like carotid artery. For example, if you have a nasopharyngeal tumor or a posterior clitoral tumor that are going very close to the carotid, probably angiography with a balloon test of the carotid could be useful in order to also from under medical legal point of view to know if you have any compensation in case of blowout of carotid, or in other situation also considers, but in very, very extreme cases, we also closed the carotid a couple of times. And so, but obviously you have to discuss your case before think about, but I think that MRI, first of all, CT scan can help you to know if you have some bony alterations or bony remnants. If you need, can help you also CT scan to guide you during surgery, or for also for navigation, or to fuse MRI and CT scan during navigation. But first of all, you need a good imaging to have all the information about the nature of the lesion. Never start with such a kind of surgery without knowing exactly what you are, what is your lesion. You need a diagnosis before.
I think that there's only one question that we could allow to do due to the time. And I would like to express this one from Armando from South America. And his question is, if you're always performing dissection anteriorly to posterior to decompression of the orbit in cases of malignancy of the anterior skull base.
No, no. The decompression of the orbit? No.
No. He's. I guess he was asking if you expose from the lamina papyracea to the to the sphenoid sinuses in malignancy of the anterior scapulas.
No, I'm sorry if showing you the anatomical dissection, I show you that you can potentially also remove the papyracea and if you need the periorbit, but remember one concept, you have always to follow oncological concept. Especially in the nose, you have a box with some anatomical limits that are very important to preserve whenever are not involved by the tumor. If you don't need, because you have now a direct invasion, for example, of the periorbit or of the dura, okay, yes, sometimes you need to remove because of free because you need to reach free margins. But if you don't need it, leave it, because you have to remember that the periorbit as the dura, the periosteum in general, are natural barrier for tumor spreading, okay? And so if you have to remove because you have a direct contact of the tumor, of course you have to remove because you need to be radical. But if you have, for example, the tumor in the ethmoid without any sign of contact with the papyracea, don't have to remove papyracea and periorbit because you have to reach 1 centimeter of margin, because this is another concept, the piecemeal resection in the nose, differently from open surgery in the neck, for example, for oncology. And so sometimes, yes, you have to remove your margins, like periorbit or like the scalvase, but remember that you are removing a barrier for tumor spread. If you don't need and you don't have any sign of contact with the tumor, please leave, because you have always to think, for example, in sinonasal tumor, you have an high rate of local relapse. If you have, for example, a tumor quite low in the nose and you leave the dura, you can still remove the dura in order to reach a good margin. If you already removed the dura and you had a relapse of the tumor, the relapse, the intracranium towards the cranium is more critical, because your barrier was previously removed, and so the spreading of the tumor is not under control. Hoping that was clear.
Yes.
Obviously, when you have to standardize a resection, a surgical technique, you show all the steps, the possible steps, yes, as in an anatomical book. But obviously, not all steps have to be performed for example, transcriptional approach. For example, you can also, and we recently published, you can also perform a unilateral resection for intestinal type adenocarcinoma if you have a tumor that is confined to only one side of the nose. And so you can leave intact the left side and you can remove the dura only on the side of the tumor, for example. So you have to customize, but you have always to follow the oncological concepts.
And this is very interesting, because since the last 7-8 years, everything's changed. We changed through a perspective in which we basically were approaching monolateral diseases, opening both sinuses and both box. And right now we switched once again because of the studies and the different articles also prove that monolateral could be enough. And I know that mainly the Brescia and the Varese School are publishing those kind of researches, and we are really thankful for those kind of studies. Thank you again, Dr. Alberto Schreiber, and all the delegates for participating. I would like to have you once again for the next second session in the 2019-2020, and I will be glad to join your summer school this summer. Thank you, everybody. I would like to express my gratitude to Alberto Schreiber, and I would like to remind you, next appointment, 1st March, we will go live for a surgical procedure with Dr. Janikaran from India. And in this, the next step, we will approach different lesion in a different ways. Plus, this time is going to be 9 a.m., 8:30 a.m. in the morning, wrong time. So please join and use once again the previous registration link that we provided. Thank you again.